Since we're all here, why don't we get started? This is the, make sure I'm reading this right, the new power. Did you get those guys? Shh, boys. This is the title of this that I did not pick. It's a new power generation of comics. It sounds like it should be sponsored by Coke or Pepsi. New power generation.
Or a CNC music factory.
No, it was a Prince record. It was actually a Prince record.
The panelists, as we have them starting at the far end, is Matt Fraction.
Hey.
Ivan Brandon, moving up. Brian
Boland.
Boland. Brian. Who has just lost some cookies. In the real, literal way, not thrown up. Jonathan Hickman, the Warriors. And much more. And Ed Brubaker, who joined us late. I guess going from what I was told that they wanted this panel to discuss is kind of the idea of coming in, being the, I guess, a new generation of comics writers. Brian, I know that you are very influenced as you look back like at previous Marvel work. And you had mentioned something in the earlier Marvel panel about how you had heard stories, and there are great stories of relationships between other Marvel creators of the past, but you've heard stories about how there wasn't communication, there wasn't talk between, but I mean, all of you guys are friends, even, you know, just in the community and personal friendships.
Well, I don't
and
know Ivan at all.
Oh, sorry, Ivan, can you sit over there, please? but just, if you could, talk about your working relationship. I mean, I'm not specifically going with the guys who are working for Marvel, but I mean, I think one of the things that struck me when I thought of you guys, especially, it's almost like it's a virtual bullpen from the old Marvel days. That it's
the
close
Xbox
friends.
Bullpen.
Yeah, they didn't have Xbox Live in those days. Things would have gone different.
Or they wouldn't have had to live in New York.
Yeah, exactly. They dressed up in.
You know, it has a lot to do with what.
You might want to hit the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
You're not actually talking to each end of the room. No.
I'm talking to Matt. Yeah. You know, Joe and then President Bill Jemis kind of set the tone for this, and it was a great mix because they flew us to New York and sat us in a room and picked our brains or we picked their brains and what was happening. Like, first it was just me and Mark Miller, and we would come up to Marvel, and we'd sit in a big room, and we'd start working out stuff, and it was a lot, and we were having I have no kids in here, right? It was like a nerdgasm. You're like, I'm in the Marvel bullpen, oh my God, just like Stan Lee, Steve Ditko was right there, you know, and it was cool, and we liked it, and what happened was, I would then spend a lot of time with editors Ralph Macchio and Tom Brevoort, who are there the longest and have the most stories to tell, and the most lessons learned. And they would tell you them, and they would tell you all the things that went right or wrong, and I would just suck it up. But these lessons can be there's a lot to learn from them, a lot to learn. And as things became more cohesive, and in come all these guys, and the retreats got bigger and bigger, and the ideas got bigger and bigger into what the quote-unquote events, the tone that was set in those smaller days in the earlier years of the Ultimate Universe became the standard, and we all are kind of like professors of nerd culture, and we all knew these stories about what worked and what didn't work. You know, Jim Shooter's great successes and his maniacal, you know, failures that happened both at the same time, and what happened right and what happened wrong. And actually, it's the reason Joe Quesada has been editor-in-chief for so long. It's a job with a very short shelf life for some people. But learning the mistakes of your predecessors, you can go, oh, you know what? This works, that doesn't work, and I'll go ahead. So, but what's cool is, yeah, it just ended up that there's a lot of writers with we admire each other, we generally like each other, we're rooting for each other. I want to read Ed Brubaker's Captain America more than I want to read my stuff, you know, and that's the best. So when you're all in a room together, it gets good. And then also we have Xbox, and it allows us to we can get on Xbox, and we can rationalize staying on there for hours because we're having a story meeting.
Right,
story meeting.
How do these? I've heard of these Xbox story meetings. I know that you pretty much you guard the location of them because you don't want somebody coming in there saying,
well, you just make it private,
holding a gun to somebody's head. But I mean, how do you have a story, and what game do you play, and how do you have a story?
Well, when it really gets moving, there's no actual playing. If there's an actual, like, people
really? I mean, the game stops.
Yeah, I mean, you're, no, there's a lot. There tends to be a lobby before, like just technically, there tends to be a lobby where you get all the players together and you set whatever the parameters the game's going to be, and then you go play the game.
Yeah, I mean,
when we really get into it, it tends to just be people sitting in a lobby talking and not actually. It just works like a party line.
Me and Rick Remender were online on Xbox like for 45 minutes last night, and we never played.
Yeah, other times you can just talk to people. You just talk. You just use it like a phone.
Conference call. Yeah.
Now, did you get in this morning or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm very sleepy.
I thought you brought your Xbox with you. Yeah, and that's like, whoa.
He's got that special one.
I'm uncomfortable talking to these guys without a headset on.
You
want
to put your ear like this?
Much easier.
In that, you know, the bulk of you with what you're writing is superhero stuff. And again, Ivan, I'm not trying to single you out.
I'm doing superhero stuff too.
Vikings, again.
Yep. No, it's tremendous, tremendous book.
Thank you.
I'm kind of curious as we go. Please. As we're talking about just, I guess all of you in a way at one time or another when we've talked about who you look back to, and there's this whole feeling, especially this many years into comics, of really standing on the shoulders of giants. If we could just kind of go down the line here and go through of who do you look to? Who's your personal bar, the measuring stick that you hold your stuff to, either on a specific book like Ed with Cap, if you have somebody that you say, if I can match or surpass in my mind what so-and-so did on Captain America, I'm doing good. But just, I'm curious, as you're looking at your stuff, who do you, where do you put your bar and who do you hold yourself against?
Shakespeare.
And Einstein. Jesus Christ and Gene Simmons. That's who. Gene
Simmons. I don't think like that.
Geddy Lee.
There are writers who I like and love, whose work I love and go back to time and time again, but I don't see any. It's not a demonstrable comparative. It's not a qualitative or quantitative.
Comics have changed so much that it's like, if you look back at stuff we loved in the 70s, compared it to what we do now, just the style of writing is so different you can't compare it, really.
I think it's a really bad idea to do that, actually.
Really? Yeah, it's such a trap.
Yeah. Why do you think
I think Hickman's going to kick your ass.
I'm going to disagree with you, though.
That's okay.
You know who I look up to tremendously is... very specifically to me, Walt Simonson and Howard.
Well, wait, but that's a different question. It's absolutely a different question. Because you're talking about the artist of
X-Men Teen Titans crossover.
You're talking about a completely different question.
In the day,
you're talking about a completely. This is your answer is going to be a different answer than this question is about.
But I like to do that,
and that's fine. But I'm just letting you know.
Well, see, Walt Simonson.
Brian's answering a completely different question.
When I was a kid, I was in a panel. Walt Simonson.
I'm going to shoot you in the head,
Matt.
I'm going to stab you in the neck. Hold still. I'm right behind you,
Mr. Fraction. Would you stop badgering the witness?
Things are playing Call of Duty.
Spaghetti. That's what you say when you stab your bros in the back.
Stay right there.
Spaghetti.
I'm going to shoot you in the head. Is that a line from a story meeting?
No, that's a Call of Duty conference.
That's what
you
do.
Okay. Okay.
Brian, are you downloading something?
No, I didn't. Whenever I graduated college and I tried to break into comics and failed, I mean, I quit reading for like 8 years that I didn't pick up a single comic, because it was painful and I sucked and all that. whenever I came back in was, I guess, four or five years ago now, was the first stuff I'd read for what's essentially now 13 years of comics. And it's probably the best writing that's been in comics consistently. I mean, if you look at the total body of books that are being written, I think that the writing nowadays is way better than it used to be. So when you ask that kind of question, and I don't remember the books from my childhood beyond a nostalgic kind of tent. I mean, I don't look at them as anything other than God, Great Darkness Saga was awesome. Beyond that, I don't really think about it, structurally or craft-wise. And so everybody that I look at, that they're still working for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything that I read that blew my hair back, I mean, the first Warren Ellis comic, the Warren Ellis comics that I read first, what the last Warren Ellis comic I read was like Excalibur. That was like his, like one of the first things that he was doing at Marvel, mm-hmm. I guess. And that was right when I quit reading. And so when I came back, you know, you had Planetary and you had Authority and you had all of this amazing stuff that he'd done. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that inspired me. I mean, and so if you look at that and you kind of try and take your inspiration for that, it just turns into kind of parody, which is why I think it's very dangerous to do that.
I think it's ironic, though, because like you said, and I totally agree with this, I think pound for pound we probably have the strongest group of writers in comics, the strongest average for sure, ever, probably. But no.
It sounds self-serving, but I believe that.
No, I really do believe that. I think it, you know, I can't think of a single conscious influence, but I read and enjoy more now than pretty much ever.
Well, Penthouse Forum is a big
all my comics start with you. Never believe what happened to me.
You just have to delete that sentence.
But to get to where you're going, which this is a great. Well, but I lived in Charlotte for 8 years. I worked at Heroes Aren't Hard to Find for 3, and I've worked 4 of these shows on the other side of the table as a runner and all that stuff. These kids hauling boxes, like that was what I did. This is very much my hometown show, and I had the best creator experience I've ever had and the worst creator experience I've ever had as a fan, and that has absolutely influenced me every single day.
Like, we only want to hear the worst one. Go ahead.
Yeah, the worst one was I was quite a fan of an artist. And I wanted to meet him. He's at the show. It was rare. It was a rare appearance. I was very excited, and I stood and waited. And he was talking to a group of guys for about half an hour, and I didn't want to encroach on personal space. They clearly had a relationship. So I was just there quietly waiting my turn, you know, in line. And half an hour, I'm standing there, stacking the guy's books, and then one of his toadies turns to me and goes, "So-and-so's done signing for the day." It's like 3:30, and I was like, "Oh, fuck you." And I was I walked away. I threw the guy's stuff away. I've not bought a book by the guy since. But I've never forgot it.
Does
I've never
his name
forgot
rhyme
it.
With Schmooshmaker?
No.
Exactly. Schmooshmaker.
And that man was Ed Brubaker. But that was it. But I never forgot.
This morning.
Like just the basic human courtesy. Of like, "Hey, you know what, man, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go get lunch. Can you come back in a little bit? Or listen, I'm tired I'm sorry, come back tomorrow, or I'm done for the day." Don't make the kid who's clearly chomping at the bit to make like wait for half an hour because you're blowing off for half a day. I've never forgotten. I've never bought the guy's work since. I spit on the ground, never hear it. The flip side to this was meeting Michael Allred, who was sweet and funny and personalized every book he signed, and like we joked and laughed, and I walked away thinking like I'm gonna buy everything this guy ever does because of like how high class he was, and that's the kind of stuff you carry with you, and that stuff is tremendously important.
Yeah, that is what I.
That's what I would like.
I don't take like writing style from others, but I met Walt Simonson when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I met him at a show just like this in Cleveland, and I was a kid, and I sucked, and he brought me behind his table, went all through my portfolio, showed it to other people in line, talked to me for a half an hour, changed my life. There's no way I walked out of there I'm not going to be a comic artist or a comic person. That was it. And he corresponded with me a couple times. He sent me Andrew Loomis's book on anatomy. And it changed my life. And then years later, and I waited like 15 years to come up to him with Jinx. I came up to him with Jinx, and I said, "Listen, when I was a kid, you changed my life, and I'm trying not to bother you all these years, but I just won an Eisner a couple days ago, and because of you, and thank you." And now, so he changed my life then. And then now that I know him. And I've seen him, and we actually ended up at a con in Australia for 3 weeks together, and I got to see he is absolutely everything I want to be to the readers, as a creator. He draws as if he is someone 30 years younger than himself. He is nothing is stopping him. And I'm so blown away by it. It's so classy and cool.
Yeah, that's
so nice. And even on our message board, I try to do. I go, "Be Walt Simonson every day. Just be Walt Simonson." And Howard Chaykin's the same thing. It's just like, he's like an elder statesman now, and he's really enjoying it. And I was like, man, just be cool, man.
Yeah, just be classy.
There's guys
and be
online,
cool.
We see them all the time. They're not classy, and they're not cool, and they're fighting with each other. You guys know what I'm talking about. And it's not cool. And I go, just, you know, but we spend more time paying attention to that because it's fun to watch. It's, you know,
it's a car crash. Everybody looks at car crashes.
But if you get to meet Walt Simon or someone like that, just. Wow, just really, it changed my whole life. And even when I'm here, that's all I think about is be Walt Simons.
Yeah.
Walt specifically, too, is like the guy that I think you most hear stories of people, like stories like that. Everyone has, like, everyone who's met
him
Walt.
Yeah, and Archie Goodwin were like
has,
the,
yeah, has that yeah. story.
But
about
there's so few of their generation still producing.
Yeah.
You know, Walt, I mean, too, Walt and Chaykin shared a studio together.
Yeah.
229 West 29th Street,
was
New York.
Was Miller with them? Was Miller with them?
Miller
for the time?
And Alan Weiss.
It was just a scary, scary.
Yeah. So you had
of,
in one.
No, a scary,
you
scary
had,
group
you
of
had
creativity.
In,
there.
You had in one room, American flag,
yeah, and scary.
Simonson's Thor, and Ronin being produced simultaneously. In one room.
And we're on Xbox shooting that.
Yeah, and we're. I don't know. Maybe they should fight Galactus.
That's.
Do you think? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say those guys are probably wearing suits while they all did the.
I'm sorry. Your headphones fucked up. Can you say that again? Ivan has the worst headset. Every time we talk to him when you're playing, everyone you hear fine, and then you hear there's like me. It's very odd being able to actually understand what I've been saying.
Taking what you said there about Simonson and Chaykin and Miller and Weiss together. And
oh, yeah, and the guy that did Steel Grip Starkey.
With what we said.
What? Steel Grip Starkey.
Yeah, I was good. So I was trying to think of what Alan Weiss was
Steel
doing.
Grip Starkey?
Then.
Steel Grip Starkey?
Yeah. Steel Grip Starkey.
It was about a guy who had a cosmic power tool.
Oh, God. Yeah. The cosmic toolbox.
Yeah, the something tool, the magical tool or something like that. But yeah, it was an epic series.
I mean, going back to what I was talking about earlier with like the virtual bullpen, the virtual studio. We have a lot of virtual studios around of guys that you see their names together as, oh, we're in a studio. I'm like, you don't live near each other.
Do you think
you can still see that same kind of synergy? And that's even I guess arguably to say that Thor influenced American Flag, influenced Ronin, all.
Well, that you can see. I mean, you can see the sound effects alone. The onomatopoeia stuff alone. You could tell their use of text was very much. Everybody was looking over everybody else's shoulder and seeing how far you can push it. But it's funny when they have us up to editorial retreats. You spend like half a day at the Marvel offices, and then the other 2 days or 3 days or however long it is tend to be off-site. They rent a large meeting space that can accommodate like 30 to 50 people. But everybody's really excited for that day at Marvel because it's the closest thing to the old, even though it's not the same building, but it's like you go down the hall and you can go down the hall and see like everybody's offices, and that's the closest. You kind of want to show up in like shirt sleeves and a tie just to kind of smoke cigarettes and put them out.
We're all really excited about it, and everybody at Marvel is.
And Marvel can't wait to get out because they want recess.
Yeah. But they got all the art for the upcoming books on the wall.
Yeah.
All the covers are on clipboards.
Yeah. Really, you know.
See, what I also like about the bullpen is that everyone has a bulletin board where they have shit on it and making fun of creators.
Yeah.
But they always take it down. Clearly, we're not. They have to be have shit about us too.
Yeah. Oh,
but
totally.
It's not.
You go in there like light patches on the bulletin board where something was taken down.
The
real
shape
quick.
Of my head.
except in Axel Alonso's office, who actually has pumpkins with Xeroxes of people who he hates, their faces on it, and Bowie knives stabbed in it, rotting pumpkins, just a wall of
No, there's another editor who hates an editor who hasn't worked there in 20 years, and his whole desk is like a voodoo dolls, and I hate this guy.
There's an editor there who, when we were at one particular meeting, brought up that today is the 23rd anniversary or whatever it was of so-and-so being fired at 3:18 p.m. Literally, I set the alarm on my iPhone, so during the meeting it went off. I'm like, and the moment has passed. And it was the guy commemorates it like a holiday every year, like it's the 26th anniversary or whatever it was. So.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think the question you were asking was
who was asking?
Call of Duty.
Definitely stronger than
Call of Duty World at War.
No, the selfish
zombie mode.
the selfish thing I get out of it is I like
me.
I think I play better surrounded by people better than me. Mm-hmm. Like they always say that about Clapton, like he's only as good, like when he plays George Harrison, he's fantastic. He's blowing the roof up. And I when I'm talking to Matt or Ed or John, I do feel like I'm forcing myself to be better. Like there's no excuse not to bring your A game because you'll embarrass yourself.
Right. So right.
We tend to not be a group that's afraid to bust balls if it needs it. You know, there's
A
healthy sense of competition.
So there is, yeah, I guess that's where I was going. There is an individuality. I think that's something that has surprised a lot of fans and a lot of critics, pundits, whatever.
Well, it's a team.
But there's not a monolithic Marvel voice. There's not a monolithic Marvel style that Joe's, and I have to commend Joe on this, that his tenure as editor-in-chief, he stayed away from, there's no house style. There's no house style of writing. There's no house style of art. There's no house style of book, really, anymore.
Well, he was a freelance comic book artist.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't want to work that way.
And he does try to, the best of his ability, treat everyone the way he wanted to be treated. Right. And that's kind of the mandate, you know.
And he runs. It's directed by a person that understands the creative process.
Yeah, it's shocking whenever we announce whatever we announce. There's always a certain amount of hatage on the internet.
What?
And they always aim it at Joe. Why are they blaming Joe? It was like our idea, or like that was Brian's thing, or Matt. Like it was, they're almost never.
Well, you don't
like,
see any of us stop them.
Yeah, no, of course not. I'm not gonna.
I don't know why Joe did that.
That's what he gets the paycheck for. But what I always am cracking up, I'm like, yeah, because Joe editorially mandated Secret Invasion, like yeah, which exactly. Brian had been planning for 5 years. You know, it's like.
No, it's okay because I'm sometimes they blame me for things that I didn't do.
Exactly.
I get blamed for shit at DC. I've seen my name blamed for
killing Batman.
I've said the other day there was an internet guy, a reviewer, a name reviewer who mentioned my name 5 times in a review of Firestorm. I'm like, dude, I have nothing to do with Firestorm. You can blame me for shit all day.
I will never forget when Darkhawk 79 gave you the business.
That's right. Darkhawk
79. Well, speaking of the internet, we can all do our reflexive shivers on it, but I think with, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying about comparing the bullpen then with the creators, you know, that you guys are now, I think there comes something that, you know, the Roy Thomases, the Jerry Conways of that era didn't have, is with creators now, there's a certain amount of self-promotion and marketing that has to go with it, that in a way, you have to be out there, the audience isn't guaranteed, and you have to be out there a bit more than, you know, Jerry Conway wasn't chasing down fanzines, although he would do them, sure, but he wasn't, you know, saying, hey, I have a new product coming out, can we get something talking about that?
Because nobody had to order it, they just got it, whether they liked it or not.
True,
No, but they do
delivered
fanzines,
to your
like,
store.
Yeah. When I was a kid, they had these fanzines and like the Daredevil fanzine, and
right,
I would read it like it was the Torah because I was hungry for information. Now
and godless. Hungry for information and spiritually bankrupt. I turned to Daredevil.
It was the number one publication. So, but you know, in comic Buyer's Guide came out whenever it came out. You know, but you know now.
What is it?
You guys are up and running every single, you know, 3 hours or something
yeah.
new.
Yeah.
You know, the information is there. So,
just, but I mean, do any of you feel a pressure of that? Of you've got to kind of get out there along with the product to keep your name out there. Otherwise, it could just kind of quiet down. Either not necessarily between issues, but just you know,
well, you
stay
wanna,
present
you
and stay
keep, you know,
visible.
You keep your presence to some degree. But, I mean, you can do too much.
Yeah.
You know, which is so
we've
it's
all
like,
seen that.
And everyone has seen like creators who have meltdowns on the internet, and it's like impossible to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're fucking crazy. You spent a day and a half, you spent Thanksgiving arguing with Darkhawk 79. Thanksgiving! Like, that's
oh
a sign of
God,
mental illness.
I remember that.
You got an issue with Darkhawk 79.
Wasn't me.
That happened. That happened. A name creator spent Thanksgiving arguing about reviews online. It's
the,
like
the day before they were about to have a feature article
don't
on,
go
in
too
the New
specific.
York Times.
But it's just one of those things where it's like, it's, you know, All things in moderation. Speaking of moderation, how come you don't moderate your site?
What?
How come there's not moderation on your site?
There is moderation.
No, there's just not.
Moderation.
There's extremism and there's moderation. No, hang on. If someone came to your house and spoke the way that posters speak on your board to your face, you'd kick them out. You would call the police and have them escorted from your house.
Yes, but
so what's behind that decision?
But at the same time, it's but at the same time, you're saying you can't argue that how you treat somebody in your house is going to be the same way as how you treat somebody who writes in a letter to the newspaper.
Yeah, sure you can. You don't run it. You don't
but
publish
then you're,
it.
Then you're manipulating and changing the direction of the flow of the conversation.
You don't get to yell fire in an open theater. But freedom of speech doesn't protect yelling fire in a crowded theater.
No. I mean,
aren't you infringing my freedom of speech? I can't cause a riot and stamp. You know, I can't incite to riot.
We will keep off. I mean, it's moderated. It's. I mean, right now.
I'm just very curious about this.
Why don't you post this on Newsarama? Yes.
because on Newsarama, you and I could not have a discussion about it.
We couldn't have a discussion. No,
we couldn't have a sane, rational. I'm fascinated by the idea.
But I mean, at the same time, it is moderated to the point of. I mean, the stuff that's moderated.
People can't use racial epitaphs or threaten. No racial epitaphs and no threatened.
Personal insults, death threats. Yeah, I mean, personal insults.
Are you kidding?
But then
this place is filled with them.
But then when you start taking out. There was something.
I just want to say, like, who you would find to spend your day policing a message board. I understand the logistic complications, but it's the philosophical.
There are a couple issues. There is, for the longest time, there was the size issue. Mm-hmm. Of the people that come into Newsarama are horrible and they comment. They're not like the people that you find on. No offense, Brian's board or
there's some great
forum.
People in Newsarama. They're also great.
People would compare Newsarama to say Miller World or Brian's board or Warren's boards. It was a difference of size. It was a difference of scale. It was like saying, oh my gosh, people who come to a bookstore and sit in the corner and discuss a specific issue are polite, and a football stadium during the Super Bowl. People can be assholes.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's an issue of scale that goes with it.
Sure.
There was an issue recently, where some people, I mean, they expressed their opinion of a writer's writing, and it was a valid means of expressing their opinion of how they saw it, of their view of that person's writing.
I don't see why they call me a douchebag.
Content. And again, I don't have a horse in the race. I'm just kind of I have a morbid fascination.
But there is an issue. There is an issue when people can when they make their case and say I've read stuff about I've broken the rule of Almost Famous of I do have friends
sure
who are creators. And there are times that I will read some of the, after I put an interview up with one of these guys, I will read some of the comments and go, that is the most horrible thing to say, and that person's a friend of mine. And I know that they're taking that personally. But at the same time, it's an opinion. Right. It's that person's opinion. And do I then take that person's opinion down just because it is mean to a friend of mine or it's a valid opinion? There are some freaking crazy people on there who will go after each other more than creators. But I mean we had a string recently of people that expressed their dislike for a creator, and I was on that thread and I was reading everything and moderating and going, they're not saying anything personal about him. There were some bad stuff, were some bad things that were said about him that were immediately deleted. But then after a while it was just like, I don't like his writing. I think his writing has been better. I like this. I don't like that.
I ask
Ed's stuff on Low Life was so much better than Kat.
I don't want to think about it.
But that's the flip side of availability on the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's great. Like, hey, you can have a presence. You can update Facebook and Twitter and MySpace all at the same time about your new work, and then 900 people can call you douchebag or whatever. So I mean, I'm just kind of curious about the way...
It's a very, very gray area. Yeah. And if you go too far one way or the other, you're either letting every...
Person
just run roughshod over every subject of every interview, or you're clamping down and not allowing free speech.
Right, right.
And it's, you know, it's one of those things. I saw recently Peter David was just like, you know, I believe the best answer to, you know, people saying it's my freedom of speech to say this is more free speech. Like, God bless you and the time you must have to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, it's a very tricky thing. And I know it's not going to be answered to everyone's satisfaction every single time. It's rarely answered to mine. I mean, one of the things recently, it's the Matt Brady panel.
But this is very much like, because this is something that Roy Thomas, you know, before the thin blue line between being called a douchebag and writing back in the day was Flo Steinberg, who sat at a desk at the front door and took every letter that came and threw away the cranks. There's a great Rolling Stone interview with her in 1971 about what it's like to work at Marvel and how every now and again weirdos show up. And how she was the one that kept them. And she always had the suspicion, like, one day someone's going to come in here with a gun. There's an amazing sort of story about what it was like back then. It used to be Flo. Like, Flo was the thin blue line that protected. Yeah. So I'm just kind of, I think this goes into where things are going.
I did get a perspective, and I did get a different perspective on it. My phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is our panel interrupting your phone call?
Well, I would like to say about this internet thing.
But no, what gave me a different perspective on it was recently when we did sell the site to Imaginova. I went from being the person who was moderating the comments and saying, no, you can't say this about this, you can't. I went from that to being the subject. Mm-hmm. And there are still people. And I.
You didn't like it too much, did you?
Oh, hell no.
Not so funny now.
it's gotten me looking at it all again. But yeah, I mean, there are people out there who are just like, well, he got his 30 pieces of silver every time.
30 pieces of silver. Yes. I compare your sale of this comic book website with the betrayal of Christ.
Yes. Exactly.
Freedom of speech.
I hope you got more than $30.
That's
piece of silver. Otherwise, you didn't sell out enough.
Do you know how much silver's worth?
I've got to appreciate that. But that's on a different side. Fairly, you know, it's a fairly vague or obtuse reference for a comic. You know, like typical.
30 pieces of silver. Good way to go.
But that's on a different
Here's
site.
Your ultimate
exactly. I feel the same way you do. Of just like, I want to go to that site and say. Yeah.
I'd just like to say, when people post things on the internet that they say is a review, they should actually review the thing instead of just posting a synopsis of every scene that happens in it. That is not a review. When I read a movie review, I don't get a scene by scene in order. And then she goes to the doctor, and then the doctor says this. That's not a review.
It's responses after that. Well, that sounds sucky. I'm like,
that's why I'm saying I hate those because
I can't believe Bendis
comparing.
Has dictated that she has to go to the doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Great job, Brubaker.
Way to go,
I'm
Joe.
Not going to read that. Everything's revealed on page 40.
it's kind of this weird sort of Wild West.
It is.
Era. And it's very interesting. That's the flip side to availability on the internet. Yeah. Anyone can knock
on your door. Some of our friends are absolutely nowhere to be found on the internet. And they've told. I've had long, lengthy conversations. They are dazzled by those of us who choose to be part of the community and don't want any part of it at all. And I get it. If you don't have the temperament up for it, don't go. If it's going to upset you, don't read it. I've had a friend recently, a very big-name comic writer, who literally had to be talked down off a ledge because of something I read on your site. And it was...
we can talk later.
What?
We can talk later.
Anyway, so...
It can be fixed. I'll fix it.
But I said, listen, man, if you're not in the mood for it, just unplug it. Just don't...
Say the Maya Rudolph thing.
Oh, yeah, Maya Rudolph, in an interview that I read, said that people look for stuff about themselves online are never looking for the good things. They're only looking for the bad things. Yeah. And they don't stop reading until they found something so bad that it's just... It
ruins their day.
She said that it's the same compulsion that makes teenage girls cut themselves.
Yeah. And I thought that was... Because you're not looking for... You're looking for the worst possible thing you can find. And once I read that, you kind of stopped doing it.
And the more successful you get, the easier it is to find that stuff.
You're right, though. It's an interesting dynamic that did not exist.
Yeah, it's brand new. There's no rules. Yeah. Because that's just, you know, when you can, you know, one tweet to tweet away, it changes The paradigm is different. Yeah.
I think it's completely unreasonable to expect societal norms to transfer over to an artificial community. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Thank you, Professor.
I agree. Yeah. I just don't think.
Especially one where you're anonymous.
I have a theorem where.
Why? What's the virtue of anonymity?
I don't believe that there is one.
On your end, or is it just there's no
on
way
the,
to verify
on the person's
it?
End is on, I think on the person who responds to an article it, the benefit of anonymity is that person is writing thinking no one knows who this is.
The benefit
should be accepted. It should be accepted. There are guys here, the guys from my board right there, who are exactly the way they are online in person. You know what I mean?
Sexual dicks in the universe.
It shouldn't just be allowed.
Registered sex offenders.
Registered sex offenders.
Not registered.
Freelance.
Nascent sex offenders.
just a little lonely.
Wannabes.
But I got them urges. I got them crazy urges.
Anyway.
I just bought a van on Craigslist. I'm getting ideas. Post.
Too many. It's white. Nobody will be able to know it's me.
No, but I call it internet balls. Like the person is not within eyeshot or arm's reach of something, and it empowers them to be a douchebag.
I know, but again, it's one of those. But the flip side to that flip side is that other times you get complete geniuses or these amazing people that you never would have encountered anywhere. Look at what's happening, in Iran right now via Twitter. Or look at, people. All of us have had moments of people reaching out and contacting us. Sometimes even if it begins in the interest of pedantry, I've met really smart guys, and I've blown something, some tiny bit of research. It's like, well, as it happens, I'm a neurochemist, and this is da 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 da, and like, oh, that's fascinating. You make these amazing contacts that you never could have possibly made before. You meet these people. The benefit is, hey, you can meet some fascinating and incredible and wonderful sex offenders.
But on the flip side, I've seen a lot of guys come to my board. You've seen it too. The writers come to my board and literally go, "Hey, anybody here a cop? Because they're too lazy to do their own research. They're like, you can't. Anybody know anything about international finance?"
Didn't I go on there and ask one time which Marvel characters had a dad that died?
All of them.
And I think you were like the fourth post after that. Fucking kidding me?
Can I ask one thing about Nizarama that I've been curious about and that I'm sure everybody will hope that we move away from it?
What the F is up your A?
You didn't always have comments, and I'm just curious what...
Nizarama
1.0 a zillion years ago. You guys didn't have...
Back when you coded always, in pencil.
No, you weren't always like the message board format. At some point you...
No, we moved... Oh, gosh. We moved to the comments. We moved to the message board format...
I know it was a long time ago.
It would have been comments because
2000.
That's my question.
Appreciating. I don't comment afterwards. People only comment about something that pisses them off generally, or they're like a super fan.
I'm curious what
the idea. The idea behind comments was the idea behind anybody puts comments or a community up is to increase traffic, increase community, and.
To build resonance too. You want them to continue.
Yeah, it becomes a place. For the longest time, and there still are creators who feel that unless Newsarama's talking about it, unless CBR is talking about it, good or bad, if those two places aren't talking about it, no one's talking about it, and you're going to
sure.
See
but I feel
that
like the and I don't mean it as a judgment call. I was just curious, but I feel like I've noticed that the signal to noise ratio on. Like positive stuff gets a lot less posts than negative stuff.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Someone's really upset about
exactly.
It.
I could put an interview with Brian up, and it'll get a lot of posts.
Really,
and,
I have never noticed.
Although
that.
they're not as bad as they used to be.
No,
but
I won't go away. They used to think I hope that would go away.
I can put
not
up
as bad as they
I,
used to be.
I can put up go. a story about the most commercial book, and it'll get a zillion posts. But then you can put up a story about a beautiful Eisner-worthy labor of love project that will just bring a tear to your eye when you read it, and one person will post saying, I would have liked to have known this was coming out so I could have pre-ordered it, jackass.
Yeah.
Well, that's just, and that's the
it's those moments that makes it all worthwhile.
It really is. It really is. I mean, you know, and that's, you know.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. New power generation.
Hickman is bored.
Does anyone have any questions?
Shockingly,
so
we have a real community.
My neighbor. Sure,
yeah. Perhaps we should interact.
Back there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dick.
First.
Oh, I weep.
Hello. Hello. Do you guys feel like your opinions on the internet have been shaped by the fact that a lot of you guys have kind of come up with the internet? Like, Matt has a long history, like starting on the Warren Ellis forums, and Jonathan's had the Pro NEA website forever.
Pro gay website.
There's nothing wrong.
Pronia. However you say that. I don't know.
Open your mind, Ed. Come on.
So you guys feel like, you know, kind of coming up with that has sort of changed the way you think about interaction with people online?
Of course.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure. Okay, thanks.
It thickened our skin. It thickened our skin to a rhino-like hide.
Well, but yeah. I mean, but it changes.
Clearly.
It changes how, I mean, it certainly changes, I know for the guys on this table for sure, it changes how vocal you are about certain things. I mean, you definitely, once you've been on the other side of the noise, you're less likely to openly critique someone, say, or something like that, something that you might have done beforehand. But yeah, no, it obviously, it totally, it, you, someone, you know, someone speaks the sort of things that we're talking about on you. You're definitely going to be conscious of not being that person, you know.
Well, you know, when I first broke into Marvel, I had met Bill Sienkiewicz, and I was just starting to work with him on something, and he was my hero, man. Bill Sienkiewicz, and he said to us, he goes, you know, back when I was doing like New Mutants, like I had no idea there was any fans. Like they'd get like one letter, like you know, meanwhile we're home. Like obsessing
he's
over every
lot,
decision.
Yeah,
like he's rocking our world. He had no idea. He's just in his studio doing his own thing. And I'm like, that's amazing, because then I look at like to me, the most selfish moments for me on the message board, just the existence of my message board, the selfishness of it is that it keeps me honest, because you can't do hacky shit if you know you're going to show up on your panel, on your board every day. Because I will hear.
Now your board is kind of down to a point where if you got hit by a bus, your board would continue.
They
without
don't
you.
Think they notice your board.
You pop up, but like your board is sort of like a self-perpetuating system.
Yes.
At this point, it's big enough, long enough,
the heart of it,
richly
is
engendered community that it kind of goes on its own.
It becomes the Pat Lloyd.
But it's been. I mean, how in one form or fashion, it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
More I mean that's the system perpetuates itself now.
We've been
11 years now. Yeah.
But that requires, and now right now, like I said, you could get hit by a bus. But for those first 5 years,
well, eventually someone
grew.
Would stop paying the server bills.
Right. I don't think that's true. Your hand doesn't necessarily have to be on the tiller every day.
But
to grow it has to be. It has to be. No, you have to be like.
But its existence keeps, right. I think, keeps me and a lot of other creators honest, because really you don't want someone to go.
But like, you know, back in like the old Ellis form, like Ellis was posting 300 times a day, and that was like, and that was how he grew and built that site. Was he did it by the same, you know, by manning it? I've learned I don't have the time, patience or talent to do that.
Well, you're off of everything, aren't you?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Just Twitter, right?
Yeah, and even then, it's
Google searching. Anyway, so
I don't. You're right. I don't have the temperament.
Yeah. No, but well, Warren built a monolithic castle of hot goth chicks, and I got a bunch of guys that kind of look like me.
Yeah.
Life isn't fair.
Yeah. Exactly.
Next question.
But your guys have more disposable income.
My question is to Ed. When the main reaction, at least from what I read online about Steve coming back, was like it was editorially mandated, or it wasn't Brubaker, it wasn't your decision. Did that upset, or were you even surprised by that?
Well, it's like what I'm talking about. Like Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley have never ever said you have to do this or you have to do that to me ever. And like if you look back at Cap 25. Like, when we printed the director's cut version, there was stuff we had to black out of the script that was at the back because it would give the clue of how we were going to bring Steve back. So I keep saying, hey, internet, it's not a deus ex machina if you planned it in the first place. But it was always my intention. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, though, when people on the internet are like, oh, fucking Joe Quesada, how dare he make Brubaker do this or that? And it's like, yeah, like Joe's going to make me do anything. That's totally not who he is, you know? Plus, I'm too lazy to follow instructions.
Behind you.
Yeah, I want to go over there, and then we'll come up here.
How y'all doing? Glad that y'all were able to make it to Charlotte, and it's a good thing I could meet you all in person. So just thank you for being here. But my question is, how do you get yourself mentally ready to make a decision as far as killing Cap, for example, before the heat that's about to come from the fans?
I had no clue it was going to be that big a deal, and I'm really glad. Like, I wrote that book because Civil War, there was like this big delay, so all of our books got pushed back like 3 or 4 months. So I had written that book like in August, and it came out in February, and it wasn't until Jeff Loeb was at like the Winter Summit that year, and he's like, wait, so in February Cap dies? Shouldn't that be a big deal? And like then and then suddenly there was this huge publicity. Like, I think we all thought it would be a fairly big deal, but we had no clue. If I'd have had any clue that it was going to be like a story, like Brian was in Italy at the time, and like the Friday.
No, I was in Ethiopia.
No, you were in Italy then. Ethiopia was more recently.
Okay.
But you were in Italy. You were in Italy at a con, and you were and like the Friday that you were there, like it was like a couple days later, like 2 days later, it was front page news in Italy. And you're like, I think this is kind of a big deal.
No, it was on the front of the page. You're absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
I was like, yeah, that was insane. So if I'd have known, I would have never been able to do it probably. So just because it's so weird, but I didn't get any death threats. Apparently, you have to kill Hawkeye for that.
Yeah, Hawkeye gets you.
Apparently, you have to not even show up at your. You have to not show up at your table for half an hour before signing to get death threats these days. Right. You've really leveled up.
Yeah.
Up here, if we can go up here. He's been waiting. Then we'll come back. That.
Guys, I'm a working stiff. I go to a job 9 to 5 each day, and I want to know what goes into an idea like releasing Cap's death or Cap Reborn to the news, because I like a surprise when I read my books. So when Cap 25 came out, I went to my job. I heard the big death had came. So I didn't look at anything online, told everyone not to talk about it. But when I get home, roommate, right when I walk in the door, spoils it. Like, I had my books ready to sit down and read on top of my pile, out of it. And so when Cap Reborn comes out, I wasn't able to go pick up 600 on Monday because my shop didn't get it. So I found out about that through the internet.
But you knew we were publishing a book called Reborn. Right before the 4th of July. I mean, how big of a surprise could it have been?
It's not that big a surprise, but I did want to know what goes into
it. Some retailer said, I think it's Thanos Reborn. I'm like, yeah, because I'm really known for my work with Thanos.
Yes, it could be.
And that makes sense, Thanos Reborn on the 4th of July. I mean, yeah. He's very patriotic.
But no, it wasn't that big a surprise. It's just what decision-making goes into actually publishing that. And plus, where do you get your fabulous collection of hats?
My wife buys my hats, and I don't. As far as the publicity stuff goes, I think it really just comes down to them trying to get the publicity on the days that the books are coming out, or that I don't. The Reborn one, I think it was scheduled to hit that day, and they realized that it was going to spoil Cap 600 if it didn't come. If so, they rushed to get Cap 600 out that day, which was a big deal, and I think cost Marvel and Diamond money too, and. You know, but it was so that people would be able to get the book that day, so it wouldn't have, you know, they wouldn't have had 2 days of news and be like, oh, great, here's that comic where this thing happened.
But all that happens at a meeting that happens, like, weeks before when everyone gathers around and says, what will annoy everyone the most?
Yeah.
What can we do?
Well, I mean, it's...
But we're not at that meeting. That's not us. That's not the creative meeting. Yeah. That's the suit meeting. No, seriously, I mean, I think it's just they're trying to do as much as possible to get, you know, outside publicity and which is funny because retailers always complain that, you know, Marvel doesn't do enough to promote their stuff, but whenever we do promote the stuff, then they complain that we didn't promote it right or we didn't do enough to promote it. And it's like, well, we only got picked up by 400 newspapers, so yes, nobody picked up the story. Like,
yeah. Right, and obviously it's going to...
And half more
than half
the
obviously it's
going to
sell much more if...
Huh?
If people know Captain America is going to die in a certain issue, it's obviously going to sell much more than a random issue of Captain America where he happens to die.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And also, you got to think of it this way: every once in a while, there's a book that will, and it's not just hype; it's a good book. You know, they don't know. What happens is, like, even if 5% or 1% of the people who bought that, who came to the store because of the hype, came in and just said, yeah, I love comics, man. I love this experience. And then they start picking up other shit, and they pick up the omnibus, and they go, oh, what else can I buy? You know, and it gets in. That's what it's about. So even though you might have been annoyed for that minute, we might have picked up, like, you know.
Yeah, I talked to a retailer last night, actually. He said it was his biggest Monday since his store's been open, and they did a trade paperback sale that day. So they had, like, people coming in on Monday instead of Wednesday, and they're like, well, we've only got one new comic to sell, so let's do a trade paperback sale. And they made a bunch of money, so. Yeah. You know, it's Monday, so it's probably still, they only made $500, but maybe $350.
I mean, from my perspective of covering it and watching it be covered, I think if you open the dictionary and look up the phrase, damned if you do, damned if you don't, you will see the Marvel logo.
Yeah, that basically.
They try to do right by the most people. Just another site.com?
Just another site. No, Rich Johnson's new site, like by halfway through the day on Monday, he said, well, I think we can chalk up this Captain America thing as a failure because no one picked it up. And I'm like, dude, look at Google News. It's like, it was the top story on CNN. Like, and Brian was saying it was like,
this panel has very slowly become Ed versus the internet.
You too. It was Matt versus Newsarama.
I said I have no horse in this race. You're the one that said I was just kind of. It's I think a worthy discussion. Now we're lost in a cul-de-sac.
Years ago, Bill Jamis had a quote on your site. He said, "If Marvel came out and announced free milk and cookies, the first post would be, I'm lactose intolerant, you dick."
I think Joe. Yeah, Joe's even modified that to Marvel cures cancer. What about Hodgkin's disease?
Yeah. It's going to be the first question. What about Hodgkin's disease, which I have?
Yeah.
Dick.
Yeah. We can probably do like one or two more questions. Back there?
Nothing about the internet, please.
Well, then I'm just going to go ahead and sit down then. No, my question was, first off, for Mr. Hickman, I love your work. Nightly Thank News you. Was amazing, as was Pax Romana, and it's awesome. There's a couple trades down there. Y'all need to go buy it. That's my plug. But the question I had was, what is the process would you guys do when you collaborate with books, like with you and Bendis doing Secret Warriors and Brubaker and Fraction doing Uncanny X-Men and Iron Fist? Like, what's the collaboration? Like, how is it? Like, does he come up with the story and you do the script? Or
like, is it? And you think it's a joke.
I'm going to go ahead and sit down.
Absence of denial.
The joke. Me.
Well, I mean, as far as working with Brian got me my gig at Marvel, you know, so obviously, and I was a fan of Brian's work before then, so I was pretty stoked. And then, you know, what, I turned in that first 8-page thing, and you looked over that, and you were like, okay, this is good, maybe... I think maybe you had one comment about changing on that. I turned in this first script, and you were like, I don't know. You had a couple comments on that, and then after that, you were just like, go crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I'm a huge fan of Jonathan's, and I was reading his stuff, and I'm like, my first thought was, this guy should write for Marvel. Like, I would like to read his, you know, Fantastic Four. What a great, cool thing that might be. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't know the guy. But you never know. Sometimes I've pointed out people who didn't work out. But Jonathan, I had mentioned Jonathan's name a bunch of times at the retreats, and they had his eye on him, and they were looking to see if Nightly News was just a one trick pony kind of thing. Sometimes that's the case, you know. But it clearly wasn't. He had a lot to say, and I had the idea for Secret Warriors. I had the characters. We'd set him up in Mighty Avengers, and I did. I really wanted the Secret Warriors book to exist, and the plot hook.
Yeah, you had the big hoo-hoo,
but that was it. I really wanted to exist, but I couldn't write it and Spider-Woman and the other stuff that was going on. And Tom said, maybe this is where we can get Jonathan in. What do you think of that? And I was like, at the time, me and Jonathan and I had now interacted a little bit. And I literally, he wrote the whole book. Like, I gave him this, like, the premise. I gave him, like, the concept. But all the cool little shit and all the stuff in the back, it's all Jonathan. My name really shouldn't be on it, and I didn't put my name on it. And Jonathan will tell you, I was kind of shocked.
You asked. Take my name off.
Yeah, I take my name off. You know, so it's Jonathan's book, and that's the cool way. Other times, like when I wrote Illuminati with Brian Reed, we wrote that together. I wrote, he wrote, I wrote, he wrote, back and forth, back and forth. It was a big pain in the ass because it's, you know, a lot of back and forth. But it was a lot. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's like time wise, it takes forever.
Yeah. What do you guys think about that process in general? I mean, do you think that it's generally only semi-productive?
It depends on the project. I find it to be I enjoyed it. Every time I've done it, I've enjoyed it because it's a new writing experience that even this thing that we did, as little as I've done, I enjoyed the experience of watching what you would have done different when I would have done it, uh-huh. and thinking about the process, you know, and all that. But it's such a personal thing for me personally. It's just right. I even as silly as it is, the Spider-Man is a very intimate experience for me, and I don't necessarily need to share it other than with the artist, but like, you know, so
I think that me personally, I have I'm part of it's probably shaped by how long it took me to get into comics and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, I have a pretty insane amount of I don't know, authorship that I kind of demand of the stuff that I'm working on. Sure. Like, I'm really, really obsessive about it being the way that I want it to be and putting everything into it. And I think that probably, I don't know, maybe hurt that process a little bit or whatever. But, I mean, I think with all of us, I mean, we have certain stories that we want to tell so badly. We're not really interested in what the other guy has to say to a certain extent. Yeah. And it's not. And you have.
But
to
I think that's the sort of what would actually have made for a weak collaboration if you were so somehow like reverential and different. You know what I mean? Like oh gosh, yeah. I don't want to. You know what I mean? Like if you're unafraid to bring your A game, it wouldn't have been.
What would you like for me to write? Because I want to make you happy.
Yeah, nobody you don't want corn dog, Mr. Luthor. I mean, nobody wants that. So I think that's what makes it successful.
Yeah.
No, but you're still coming. You're still shaking off the fact that you were making comics where you did everything on the page,
every single thing,
and it was all writing.
Yes.
The drawing was writing. The typography was writing. Sure. The graphic design was writing. Yeah. And I came from that too, and Ed did, and we were just I didn't know when I first came to Marvel. I didn't know where it stopped. I told this before, but my first year on Ultimate Spider-Man, the first couple of issues. I would write it, and then I would draw it out and give it to Bagley. And I remember Bagley said, "Hey, don't do that, man."
I was looking through that one of those collections has scripts and then like email exchanges.
Yeah.
And like you get to see like, oh, well, Brian Mark drew this a little bit different that was in the script, but I can do a polish like you. And there's an exchange between you and Jemis where Bagley had clearly gone different than your map, but it was like the first time you had hit a thing where it was different than it played on the page, and there are too many words on the page, and you were trying to justify it because it's different than how it turned out. I was like, wow.
You know, thank God for Mark. Thank God Mark did it politely, because he could have easily said, "Hey, Dick." But he just pulled me aside and go, "No, that's my job." And I go, "Oh, okay." And I just didn't know where to stop. Yeah. And he understood it. I don't know.
Yeah, I used to, when I first started, like, writing stuff for other people to draw, I would do little thumbnail layouts of everything, and Michael Lark was the person. He's like, "Hey, that's the fun part. Yeah, the actual drawing of the cars and the buildings and stuff, that's a drag. Like, let me figure out how to tell the story." Like,
I still struggle with that immensely. Like, I turn in cover comps, you know, for all the books that I work on, and that's just a dickheaded thing to do.
No, it's not. But they ask me for cover comps.
No. I still think I'm right. Don't give me I mean, I think when I turn in is the way that we should go, and I believe that 100%. But it's still, it's a little bit.
But you also understand it's not your day to run the company, and you put your best foot forward. And if nobody listens to it, all right, well, I was right and you're wrong, and the book's doomed. And it's your fault.
Tom last time was like, "Hey, we're not going to do that."
I think though, like Brian said, that it does depend on the book, and I think we've all collaborated with. I mean, I've done a couple books that were co-written that. You work with a person, and that person definitely brings something that you absolutely could not bring to the table. You know, I've worked with stuff where I've been handed an idea that I would never on my best day have thought of, or my worst day, and just something that's completely unique to that person. And it's interesting sort of to work through someone else's perspective a little bit and see something outside of... Because, I mean, like, what we're talking about with Xbox and all that stuff, that's all a level of collaboration in that... We're putting out an idea. What do you think about this? And we'll rip each other to shreds if it doesn't stand up. And if you're just you, you know, alone in a void, you don't have that. Which, I mean, and you can survive that way. Everyone does. But, you know, there's a value. There's a value to that separate voice. And I think, you know, some things are, like you said, Spider-Man is something you would never want anyone else to touch. But, you know, sometimes it is appropriate.
And then, you know, then there are other guys who sort of can't work in a vacuum. I think all of us need a little bit of air and then tend to go away and just do the work. Mm-hmm. But there are guys who, what do you think about this? And then this and then this. And then, you know what I mean? Like, can't. And you know that, that you're just one number on a list of phone numbers they're calling. And after I get it, you're going to get it, and you're going to get it, and you're going to get it. And someone's going to be pitching. And by the time they're through all nine numbers on the list, they're going to have their story workshop because they've run it through nine different dudes. And then they're like, I can't imagine working like that. But there are guys that have long and fruitful careers working precisely.
And I say, Dan Slott, you're a wonderful writer.
I was waiting for that.
All right. We have actually run over here, so... I guess in closing, the bullpen still exists, but it's on Xbox. The internet is very bad.
The internet is very complex. It is a very complex
very
system.
Very gray.
It's a fickle mistress.
It's a complex
it's
system.
It's a rocky place. Where...
And Ivan has a bad headset. So, that's
it. Thanks, everybody.
Several.
Yeah, listen. Do you guys...